You're listening to Economics of Place, part of the We Love Where You Live podcast series brought to you by the Michigan Municipal League. Here's your host, Dan Gilmartin.
Welcome back to another episode of the Economics of Place podcast, and I'm excited today because we have a very special guest on the program. Irma Esparza Diggs is the lead lobbyist and advocate for the National League of Cities, which is located in Washington, D.C., and Irma is tasked with taking the message from municipalities around the country, all 19,000 of them, to Capitol Hill to meet with lawmakers and to push reforms where they need to happen, to push funding mechanisms where they're needed, and basically to promote great policy at the federal level as it relates to communities of all sizes around the country. This piece was taped at the Michigan Municipal League's annual Capitol Conference in Lansing, so you'll hear some folks in the background because Irma was our guest coming in last week to speak to local leaders here in Michigan about what's going on in D.C. and how they can get involved to make their communities better places to be. So we're going to go here for a little bit with you and talk about all the different things happening there and hopefully answer some questions you might have about the state and federal relationship. So I hope you enjoy this episode. And now here I am talking with Irma. Welcome back to another episode of the Economics of Place podcast. And I'm here with Irma Esparza Diggs, the lead lobbyist, lead advocate for the National League of Cities in Washington. Irma is our guest today in Lansing. We're taping from the city of Lansing at the Michigan Municipal League's annual Capitol Conference, a two-day event where we talk about all things political in Lansing and in Washington, and she came through to share her thoughts on what's going on in the nation's capital. Thanks for being with us.
No, thank you for having me. I love being here.
Great, great. So, a Texas native, right?
Yes.
Okay, now in D.C., yes. And you've been spent now 24 hours in Michigan, and you're looking for a home and you're going to stay, right?
Most definitely. No. It's always good to get outside of Washington. It has a real grounding effect, which is needed.
Well, in your organization, you guys represent 19,000-20,000 cities across the country.
Yes.
And tell us a little bit about NLC and your importance in sort of the web that is federal politics.
Yep. So the National League of Cities, as the National Association of Cities, we represent cities and villages and towns of all sizes. And we bring that perspective, that small, mid-sized, large-sized perspective to what's happening at the federal level. And it is so important to convey what a city of 100 is dealing with, as well as what a city of over a million residents are dealing with, not just in terms of what they're dealing with locally and the constraints that they are locally, but more importantly, what are the policy discussions that are happening in Washington and what would be the intended or unintended impact of those policy discussions?
Yeah, and that's just about everything, right? Because so many things hit on city life. You know, I know that even here in Lansing, where we do a lot of work with the state legislature, you know, if it's a tax bill, it affects government. If it's an infrastructure bill, it affects government. If it's a housing issue or an environmental issue, I mean, it's sort of, you don't get to sort of key in on one thing. You guys are kind of all over the map in terms of dealing with policies, trying to make good things going, trying to, you know, stop bad things from happening.
Yep.
And it's kind of a never-ending cycle because of the importance of the community in this whole thing.
Yes, it definitely is a never-ending cycle. We definitely juggle more than three balls in the air at the same time. You have to be able to walk and chew gum and kick a soccer ball because there you have to rapidly respond to what's happening, but you also have to keep your eye on the ball in terms of what's important to cities. The other thing that's important as a national organization is just in talking to members across the country, we have a very wide lens and bring that perspective to not just policy discussions in Washington, but also to be able to bring that to the states. You are not alone in dealing with state preemption efforts. This is what's happening in X state, and this is what's trending, and you would eventually be able, you should be prepared for, particularly as it relates to what's happening in the telecom industry and small cell wireless.
Right. So I imagine in we were just, Irma and I were just walking through the conference center here after her talk to the local officials from around the state this morning, and a council member from the small little community of Douglas on Michigan's west coast over on Lake Michigan stopped and was chatting about some issues. And what is it like to represent the interests of Douglas and the interests of New York City? How do you prioritize that? Is there more difference than similarities, or are they kind of the same thing, just sort of at different states?
No, there are definitely more similarities than differences. The reality is that regardless of the town size, they are the drivers of the economy in their particular regions. And if the economy is failing in a particular city or town, the entire region feels that. And so there are definitely more similarities. I can say, though, that in terms of local elected officials across the board, and I said it in my speech this morning, you know, they are the closest to constituents. Mm-hmm. And constituents, regardless if it's a local issue, a state issue, or a federal issue, The constituent doesn't care.
They call City Hall.
They call City Hall. I need you to fix X. And it's incumbent upon that local elected official to deal with that. And so we understand those constraints. But also, it's important to be able to remind a town, regardless of a city, regardless of the size, about what their impact and the power of their voice is.
Yeah. So we find the same thing here. It's, you know, people say, how can you represent Detroit in a little town in the UP? But It's really scalability in many cases. And sure, there are some issues that are obviously rural or obviously urban. But in between, if you're talking about great infrastructure and safe streets and good educational opportunities and good community development, I mean, that makes sense whether you're in a small town or big city. So I could see that happening for sure.
Yeah. And, you know, the other important thing to note, particularly for small cities and even mid-sized cities, is the National League of Cities, we are an extension of their teams. You know, most of those cities have fewer staff resources, the ability to focus on what's happening at the state level and the federal level, which is why the work that the Municipal League does is so important. The same thing at the federal level. And even though large cities, they have their own government affairs shops, they also have paid lobbyists, but we too support their efforts and really work collaboratively and have regular routine conversations to make sure that we're triaging really what happens, because there's so much that's coming at us on any given day.
That is true, and I should probably add, if you want to follow along to what the National League of Cities is doing, you can always check out their website, which is nlc.org, and there's a lot of resources there talking about issues, current issues of the day, and ways to get engaged, and things that you can do in your own community.
And our Twitter handle is @LeagueOfCities.
@LeagueOfCities, okay, very important in this Twitter age.
Yes.
First of all, how do you remain optimistic in this sort of crazy world that we find ourselves in from a federal political perspective, when it seems like the issues and the mood sort of changes from day to day? And then what's your recommendation to people that sort of don't, maybe were involved or want to get involved, but think, there's nothing, I can't be a part of this. I can't affect this stuff. They see what's going on in the news and all the craziness and the personality conflicts and everything else. I mean, what is it that you do to sort of hold on to sanity and keep moving the ball down the field? And what might you say to a small town mayor who's thinking about jumping in?
So let me first say that ignorance is not bliss. Information truly is power. And so you have to stay engaged at every level, because if you're not, then that truly means you're on the chopping block. You know, what keeps me optimistic, what keeps me going, and I've lived in Washington for over 20 years, during different administrations and different times when majority parties controlled.
Right.
And the common thing that has run throughout the course of my career and the work that I do is you have to stay focused on what really matters. And for me, as a national organization, it's important that we are focused on making sure that city officials have the tools that they need to have a strong budget, have strong economies, have and maintain their local authority, and to stay focused on that. And every policy that gets discussed, every bill that gets proposed, is to really look at it and say, okay, how are towns and cities and towns being affected, would be affected? Who do we need to convey? Who do we need to bring along in this to educate them in terms of our members about what's happening? But more importantly, who are the members of Congress that need to hear why this is a good or bad thing? And let's be strategic about it. Let's have the right people at the table, which is why it's so important to have cities of all sizes, both parties, come in and talk about what their reality is, because there's no such thing as a Republican or Democratic pothole. We all have issues that align us.
Yeah, it's important. I think, you know, whenever we, you know, get, it's easy to get frustrated, mm-hmm. right? It's easy to get frustrated. You and I work inside the system. It's frustrating, mm-hmm. but I think people just sort of sitting home watching the news, or maybe a local official who's not as engaged, it's easy to get frustrated. But the way to sort of work through that frustration as well as to affect change is to get involved.
Yeah.
And I think we forget that sometimes.
Oh, most definitely.
You know, we saw that last week in D.C. where, mm-hmm. you know, you had a couple thousand local officials knocking on every door in Congress, and, you know, the energy that that brings. And, yep. and you think you're not being listened to, but you are.
Yeah.
You are, even if they don't want to let you know that you are.
Most definitely.
They lock the door and they say, wait, what's going on in the cities? We need to change something. And,
exactly.
And that gives you an opportunity then to sort of move in and say, here's what we need.
Right. But, you know, regardless of everything that's happening in Washington, and what I mean by that is all the other conversations that are happening that aren't related to policy, we have to stay focused. At our Congressional Cities Conference last week, we had the Republican senator from South Carolina and a Democratic senator from New Jersey, Senator Scott and Cory Booker. And there they were on stage, arm in arm, embracing each other. And it just was, for me, a wonderful show of bipartisanship, which I think people who aren't in Washington don't get to see every day, because it's definitely not something that's conveyed when you turn on CNN or MSNBC.
One on the left, get one on the right, let them yell at each other for a few minutes, and then we go to commercial.
And it's not productive.
There's more than that happening.
There is more than that happening. It's not productive. You know, we work with staff on both sides of the aisle, and we have our city champions, and I'm fortunate for that, because there are members of Congress who are local elected officials who have served and understand that. And we just do everything we can to ensure that that is what the focus is. What city officials outside of Washington are focused on, bringing that to Washington.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Okay, let's get down to some brass tacks then. Okay, let's talk about issues.
Yes.
Infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
Roads in Michigan here are awful. And as we heard earlier this morning, it's not just about fixing roads. We also got water issues that Flint was a very an international issue, a huge tragedy in that community.
Mm-hmm.
But there are all sorts of different things going on with water systems. And we have over 1,000 bridges that are structurally deficient in this state, thousands of miles of roads that are in poor condition. And we haven't even began to talk about transit and moving people around differently, what autonomous vehicles might mean, those types of things. So that is, I know, a very important priority of the National League of Cities and something you guys are pushing on right now.
Mm-hmm.
What's happening, and what's sort of the prognosis on a truly comprehensive federal transportation bill getting done, so that we can, again, create these types of places that are going to be competitive with communities, regions, states, countries around the world.
Yeah. So our infrastructure initiative, our big push at the National League of Cities, is rebuild and reimagine America's future. There is a extreme need to rebuild America's aging infrastructure. But there is also a need to reimagine, especially given new technologies that are emerging, particularly at the rate at which they're emerging, smart cities concepts. There's just so many different things happening. How do we as city planners and builders address our deficiencies while at the same time having to plan for what's happening to ensure that if we're building new highways, that we have broadband cables being built at the same time or being put in at the same time. So you're digging once and reducing the overall cost. The reality is that it's a $1 trillion problem. And right now the federal government is, for lack of a better term, scratching its head and trying to figure out how to come up with the funding to address that problem. The reality is that there's no way that cities and state governments can meet that infrastructure deficiency alone. Just here in Michigan, I'm preaching to the choir, even with the money that you do have, like, it's only part of the problem or a band-aid. It doesn't address the larger issue. I mean, you know, it could take, I mean, there are some cities where $1 billion still wouldn't be enough to meet all of their infrastructure needs just because of the years of deferred maintenance.
Right.
But the reality is that a disaster shouldn't have to happen in order for Congress to take action and dedicate funding. And that's what we're trying to prevent against. And we've been saying to Congress all along, you can't continue to kick the ball down the road.
Right. So I know that we largely, when packages get introduced, they're more about posturing, I would say, than actually putting something forward that's going to end up in law. But there have been sort of two volleys, I guess, on infrastructure in D.C. Mm-hmm. One was last month, earlier this month, I'm trying to remember. The president, the administration came out with its own plan. That's one you just referenced. And they said, the feds are going to put up about $200 billion. We need to get to $1.5 trillion. Yeah. So the other $1.3 trillion was sort of like a baseball trade, you know, player to be named later, $1.3 trillion.
Yeah. Leveraging other people's money. Yep.
And to which the answer is, you know, if we had $1.3 trillion, we wouldn't need you guys. But that, you know, I think at least they're getting in the game. And then the Senate Democrats lobbed back. We need the money. Here's all the money. Here's where we're going to get it. We're going to repeal all the tax cuts that just went through, which is not politically palatable at this point in time.
Right.
So that was sort of another volley back across the net. But sort of now we sort of start to get a little more honest about what may be politically doable and what's needed from a policy perspective. So, you know, it's impossible to tell exactly where it's going. But where do you think the next steps are in terms of what an infrastructure plan might look like and what the hopes are for passing it?
Yes. So let me just say, there is bipartisan support for infrastructure bill related to water. And so I think that we will see in this Congress, if I had to bet money, pieces of infrastructure moving, particularly the reauthorization, expansion of
we're talking
bills.
Pipes and drinking water? Are we talking lakes and streams? Or
all of the above.
Okay.
All of the above. And so we see those moving through committees. In fact, those respective committees have said that those water bills that they've been working on, WERDA and the expansion of clean, safe drinking water and systems, those bills will move forward. And frankly, they'll move forward before a comprehensive infrastructure package would move forward, which makes the transportation piece more difficult, because the reality is that the House, Speaker Ryan has made it clear that no way, no how, as it relates to the gas tax. And the reality is that the gas tax at the federal level has not been increased since the early 1990s. Yeah. It hasn't even been indexed with inflation. And given they just passed a tax reform bill, the last thing they want to do is touch that gas tax and then be painted as someone during a political contentious year who raised taxes regardless of the need.
Well, I think that's a good point, because it's the same thing here in Michigan from a state level. I think the state needs to step up more than it has. Locals have been passing local ordinances till they're blue in the face. In the last November, in what can only be described as the most sort of anti-government, anti-establishment election we've had in this state in terms of what people sort of went to the ballot boxes for, they still passed over 80% of local millages because they care about things and they're willing to pay for things where they see their own investment coming back and helping them out in their lives and their businesses and whatnot. So, you know, we need to see more of that at the federal level as well and at the state level.
Yep. And you know what? It's happening in the states. That's the thing. I mean, in a state like Montana, where you have a Democratic governor and a Republican state legislature, they passed a dedicated funding source. They increased the gas tax and passed a dedicated funding source for overall infrastructure at the same time that they passed state budget cuts.
Right.
So you can get it done. The political
prioritization,
right. Focus, and frankly saying, you know what, this is so important, we have to do it, let's figure it out. Let's put our thinking caps on, which is what we've said to all members of Congress, regardless of which side of the aisle they are on. We've told the Democrats, we need you to go back and come up with a realistic plan so we have a starting point. The same thing with the Republicans. Like, be willing to take a stand because this is something that we need your help with. And frankly, when you go back home, you're going to have to answer for those questions as well.
Right. And I think sometimes, again, I don't mean to belabor the point on this, but infrastructure just costs money. It just does. It's there. You know, I think sometimes we get hung up on efficiencies and innovations, and I'm an
transformative
innovation.
Yeah, projects.
I'm an innovation junkie. I mean, I want to do everything different every day, and we've done a lot of that. We need to do more of it. But just to illustrate it, you know, the federal gas tax increased almost 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
No indexing, which means inflation's not taken care of. So that infrastructure or that tax that paid for a road to be built 30 years ago, that road is now coming to the end of its life cycle.
Yep.
It needs to be completely rebuilt. It's probably two or three times as expensive to build now as it was then because of labor and cost of concrete and steel and everything else that goes into that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just no money left because of money that was not ever taken into consideration. So the road just sort of sits there. It's not been maintained properly for the last 10 or 12 years because there's no money in the system.
Mm-hmm.
So it should be rebuilt today. It's not going to be rebuilt for another several years. And it's a tough thing to drive on. And you know, that's what we're facing. And it's not about who owns the road and can the county work with the city or the feds or whatever. Road costs money.
It does.
And it does. Infrastructure is one of those basic things in government that whether you're a small government or a big government person or a Democrat or Republican or whatever, anything in between, you think you pay taxes for basic infrastructure like roads and sewers and things. And you do. And we've got to do a better job of prioritizing that.
And you know what? I have to give credit where credit is due. Cities have been innovating and figuring out how to meet their infrastructure needs in absence of any federal funding or federal leadership in terms of new money. But the reality is, and it's just like a house. Like, you know, you need to replace that roof or replace those pipes, bringing water into your system, into your house. You know your pipes are leaking. That's costing you money.
Right.
And you can patch things here, but in a minute, it's going to get to the point where the money you are shelling out because you haven't addressed those needs far outweighs the expense that it would have taken had you invested that money when things weren't as bad.
Right.
And frankly, when you had the money and there was will. I mean, they just passed a $1 trillion tax plan that, all intents and purposes, is deficit spending.
Right.
You know, and they wanted everything to eliminate the state and local tax deduction to give them that $1.3 trillion. It, you know, that we ended up capping it. But the reality is Congress pays for what it wants to pay for.
Right.
And
just like you do in your household, a business,
like
whatever. I mean, it's a priority thing. People, we don't have the money. It's like, no, you do have the money. You're just prioritizing it somewhere else.
Right.
Especially now as the economy comes back, you see the federal and the state governments doing much better because things like sales tax and other things that they rely upon are coming back with the economy.
Mm-hmm.
We see that here in the state of Michigan, and we've gotten a little bit of assistance just this week. The governor signed a plan to put another $175 million into transportation in Michigan, which is wonderful, which is needed, which is appreciated. But it just is going to allow us to patch a few more potholes and make your commute a little less awful,
right,
as opposed to truly getting at the entire system. And right. same thing in D.C.
Right. But you know, Dan, what also is happening that I feel like there needs to be more education, frankly, about in Washington, not just with the administration, but with Congress, is what's happening at the state level from a preemption standpoint.
Right.
And how many localities in key states or states with huge infrastructure deficiencies, their hands are tied in their ability to raise local revenues. So even if they had the ability to charge user fees or raise property taxes, you know, in my home state of Texas, they're not able to.
Right.
And then the monies that are dedicated for their use, the state takes their share off the top, which is more than their fair share. And so that's what cities across the country are dealing with, and that's what we are working hard every day to educate Congress about and just get them to, okay, you're not going to do it this Congress. Let's figure out what we can do it and set the table for when you come back post this Congress.
Yeah, very important, and the work that the National League of Cities is doing is fantastic, and under your leadership, Irma, your lobbying team, your advocacy team on behalf of cities across the entire country has really stepped up and I think has become a force on the Hill. So
thanks,
and we look forward to partnering with you some more.
Most definitely.
You can, again, check out NLC's work and follow what Irma and her colleagues are doing at nlc.org. And Twitter handle, again, is League of Cities.
At League of Cities.
At League of Cities, where you can get the absolute up-to-date goings-on Capitol Hill and really in communities across the country, because you guys do such a good job of covering what's going on in Arizona and Wyoming and New York and Florida and everywhere in between. Mm-hmm. But Michigan's your favorite, I know, right?
Oh, most definitely.
That's right.
I will gladly come back any day of the week. Just let me know when, Dan.
All right. Thanks a lot for being here, and thanks a lot for listening here for another podcast, the Economics of Place podcast, and we look forward to talking to you again next month. Thanks.
Thank you.
This has been a production of the Michigan Municipal League. For more information on our programs and services, please visit www.mml.org and join us for the next episode of We Love Where You Live.